Katelora, 97,5 MHz.
Wir kommen aber zuerst zum ein bisschen thematischeren Teil, ernsteren Teil vielleicht dieser Sendung. Und zwar geht es zuerst zu einem Interview. Und zwar ist das ein Interview auf Englisch mit Lee Casby. Lee Casby ist von Physician for Human Rights Israel. Das ist eine Organisation, die während der ersten Intifada gegründet wurde. Sie haben ganz viele verschiedene Projekte. Es geht eigentlich vor allem darum, medizinische Hilfe zugänglich zu machen. Und sie haben verschiedene Projekte in der Westbank und in Gaza, aber auch in 48, also im offiziellen israelischen Staat, und versuchen sich gleichzeitig aber auch politisch zu engagieren gegen die israelische Regierung und für die Rechte von PalästinenserInnen und auch MigrantInnen in Israel-Palästina einzusetzen. Sie war letzte Woche in der Schweiz für einen Besuch und wir haben sie uns da geschnappt für ein Interview und so war das.
A new government has been elected and we read a lot about it here and especially about these new right-wing laws that are being proposed. And maybe we can go back for a moment and see what happened in the last year in like this formation of a new government.
Yeah, so I think the lead up to this new government has been actually the last 3 years, if you take a bigger zoom out. And what's been happening is that Israel has been in the state of political instability for about 3 years now. We've had 5 elections in that time. And the first 3 rounds were inconclusive. We kept voting more or less along the same lines. And because Israel has proportional representation, which I understand Switzerland does too, but it doesn't work as well in Israel, it forces many different types of parties to come together and cooperate, and they were refusing to for these 3 elections, with the main dividing factor being the fact that, on the one hand, a lot of the right wing has grown tired of Benjamin Netanyahu and wants him to be replaced, and all these splinter parties have been forming. And on the other hand, they don't want to or can't ideologically work with the more left-wing parties or with the Arab parties. So we had these inconclusive results for 3 elections in a row. On the 4th elections, there was a moment of sentiment in Israel that enough is enough, that we have to get rid of Benjamin Netanyahu first and foremost, above all the other disagreements between ethnic, religious lines and ideological lines. And so the 4th elections resulted in the formation of a coalition government whose only unifying factor was the fact that everybody wanted to get rid of Netanyahu, but the parties in the government were from dramatically different ideological backgrounds, and it was a very, very delicate coalition. It was the first time there was an Arab party in the Israeli government, and it didn't last for very long. It managed to do some good things in the time that it was in power, but the fact that you had some people who are historically from the settlement, pro-settlement bloc, and you had a Muslim Arab party, and you had some more socialist left-wing parties, meant that every time something big came up, it threatened to collapse the government. And it took pretty much a year for the whole project to fall apart. And then in this time, the right wing was gaining power, and a lot of right-wing voters were growing in their resentment for this government, which they perceived as a government of left-wing, some people who were sort of betraying their ideology as right-wing voters. And this led to this very extreme backlash, which we're now seeing in the new government that was formed, which is by far the most ultra-right-wing, fascist, ultra-religious government Israel has ever had. And once again, we have Benjamin Netanyahu as prime minister.
And now there's all these protests going on, and a lot of them are about the
judicial reform?
Yes, exactly. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah. So the right wing is phrasing or terming it a judicial reform. On the left, people are choosing to call it a regime change because it's a better representation of what's happening in the sense of how dramatic a change it is for Israel as its makeup as a democracy, if you can call it that. Israel doesn't have an upper and a lower house. So, and it doesn't have a constitution. And the only real body that has acted in the area of checks and balances for many years now is Israel's High Court of Justice. It has a very broad right of standing compared to other countries. Almost anybody can bring a petition and claim that their rights have been violated or that the government has acted disproportionately or unreasonably. And that has been kind of a target of right-wing anger for a long time now. Many in the right view the High Court as too activist and too left-wing, while those of us in the human rights community think that it's often the only thing that offers some degree of protection for minorities, for LGBTQ people, for women's rights, for asylum seekers. And that has been the case, that it has been often the only thing protecting those groups. It has not been left-wing in the sense of its approach to the Palestinian territories, but that's a different conversation. The reason it's under attack and what is being proposed in practice is that there's this conflation of the right-wing anti-High Court sentiment that's been going on for a long time with the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu wants more than anything else not to face his corruption trials fully. So he has a personal interest to weaken the court system, at the same time as the right wing has interest to weaken the court system to enable them to quietly annex the Palestinian territories, to treat asylum seekers any way they want to, and essentially to treat minorities and vulnerable communities in any way they choose. What's on the table right now is a collection of a few different laws, all of which are meant to weaken the power of the High Court. There is one bill that is proposing to change the way in which judges are appointed to the court to give the government more power over these appointments. For years now, judges have been appointed by a committee. The committee has some members of opposition, some members of coalition, some former judges, and some members of the Bar Association. They're going to try and change that makeup so that there's a lot more power for members of the government and ministers. So that's one way of affecting the court, by choosing more right-wing people. That's one of the major bills that's on the table. And the other one, the other major bill, is the proposition of having an override clause, which means that until now, the High Court has had the theoretical ability to strike down a law that is deemed in violation of human rights or Israel's basic laws. This bill is seeking to mean that anytime the High Court rules that way, the parliament, the Knesset, can overrule those court decisions through a simple majority of 61 members of Knesset out of 120. So it essentially means that anytime the High Court rules in a way that the government doesn't like, they will be able to then cancel that ruling and just make new law to do the thing the High Court didn't agree with.
So basically the government or the Knesset is like the new highest power and there's nothing to stop them.
Exactly.
And now this is like about this power split or who has the power, but then there's also these new bills or laws or that are being proposed. Like one thing I read about is to legalize the death penalty for especially Palestinian prisoners. What kind of laws are like coming up now?
The sense, for me at least, was just reading the coalition agreements, but also seeing how things are playing out, is that all this right-wing resentment is being exploded into reality in a very short space of time. And there are many, many different bills, each of which is harmful and insane in its own way, being put on the table at the same time. Today, there was an initial vote on a bill that was obviously promoted by Netanyahu in the background because he has a very personal reason to want it, which is there's a term in Israeli politics of nivtzarut, which I'm honestly not sure how you say in English, but when a political appointment is no longer able to fill their role and the Knesset, the parliament, can decide to remove them from that role for a temporary period. And there have been calls. There's actually a pending petition to the High Court of Justice that's claiming that Netanyahu should leave his role because he's facing corruption trials, he's compromised, and he's no longer capable of making neutral decisions to the benefit of Israel. So a bill that was proposed today and looks like it's going to move forward proposes that a prime minister will not be able to be sent to Nivtsarut unless he chooses to do so himself, and only in cases where he is physically or mentally incapable of filling his role. So him committing a horrible crime is no longer going to be, if this bill passes, enough of a reason to remove him from office. I mean, there's just so many examples of the crazy options that are on the table. There's a Knesset member from one of the ultra-Orthodox parties who is passionately pursuing a law to bar people from bringing chametz into hospitals during Passover. Chametz is any food that you're not allowed to eat during the Jewish holiday of Passover. It's anything with wheat in it. And there's been actually a contentious debate on this issue for many years in Israel now as to whether you're allowed or not allowed to bring this unkosher food into a hospital. Hospitals in Israel treat Muslims, Christians, Jews, foreign workers, citizens, everything in between. They should be a place where any person can have their family bring them food if they so choose. And he's actually pursuing legislation to bar people from bringing. It basically means that anyone who's not religious will not be able to bring food into the hospital for Passover. And they're really rushing to try and do it before Passover, which is on April 5th. It starts on April 5th. There's the death penalty bill, which proposes to use the death penalty against people who commit crimes against a very specific. The definition is very specific in how it deems who the victim of the crime is, which is essentially Jewish settlers in the West Bank, or Jewish victims of Palestinian ideological crime. And it means that if a settler commits an act of terrorism, they would not face the death penalty. But if a Palestinian does, they would face the death penalty.
Wow. And then there's also this one name we actually always read in Swiss newspapers, also Ben-Gvir, that mm-hmm. is the new security minister. What do you think this means for, like, activists or the people in Palestine and Israel?
So Ben-Gvir's party is the one that's behind the death penalty bill, one of his party members. He's not exactly the security minister. He's the minister, it used to be called the Minister of Domestic or Public Security, which means there's a division between the person who's in charge of the military and the person who's in charge of the police and the prison system. He's renamed it the National Security Minister, but that's a new thing and it's just made up, basically. He's in charge of the police force and the prison service. And I think we're seeing the results today already. He's a radical person who has been convicted of terrorism in the past. All he does and all he did before joining the Knesset was agitate, show up at the scene of any attack and make a mess. And today, when there are massive civil protests in Tel Aviv against what's happening, the regime change, this crazy legislation, the corruption, Israelis are finally waking up and yelling and screaming out against it. And they're being met with very violent reaction by the police force, which I have to say, it's not that the police was never violent at protesters before. But I think the scale and the images we're seeing are more extreme than in the past. And you see Ben-Gvir at the scene speaking to the chief of the police, telling him how to handle these protesters who he is deeming anarchists. They are former pilots from the Air Force. They're people who work in high tech. They're physicians. They're the most mainstream Israelis, people who've done military service. He's deeming them anarchists and agitating the police force against them. He's already introduced some really crazy restrictions in the prison systems. Palestinian prisoners have for a long time been this symbol of hatred for the Israeli right, because most of them are members of Hamas or the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine or Islamic Jihad or one of these parties. Not all of them, but many of them. And people in Israel really can't stand the fact that they get to, you know, be alive in prison while belonging to these parties, to these groups. And it's a very easy target because they're very vulnerable by the nature of being inmates in prisons of a hostile state. So he's already introduced, we work at my organization on prisoners' rights, he's already introduced some new restrictions on prisoners. One of them is the limit that's being gradually rolled out in prisons on how long an inmate can shower for every day, which if you translate it into time, comes to 30 seconds per inmate per day. So they'll be allowed a 30-second shower. There's also a bill on the table to limit the healthcare services provided to Palestinian security inmates as opposed to other inmates. I think the result is going to be a more aggressive radical police force, a prison service that is more oppressive to Palestinian inmates than it already is. And it's pretty terrifying.
Now, you already mentioned like the repression against one like Palestinian prisoners, which is one project that you work on in PHRI, but you have so many different kinds of projects. How do you see like this new government and the impact? How does it impact the like the projects you work with or your projects?
I think it's going to impact every community we work with. Most of our work targets the most vulnerable and marginalized populations in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territory. So asylum seekers and Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, inmates, not just Palestinians, by the way, also Jewish inmates, people who live in Israel's periphery and don't have access to the best healthcare services. They're all going to be the first front line that suffers under this government. I think asylum seekers historically have been only protected by Israel's high court. There's been really, you know, civil society and the high court have been the only thing that has stopped them from being sent back to Eritrea and Sudan, or detained for years at a time in prison without any involvement by anyone. And we know that we're going to see bills that seek to harm all of these populations. We know that the need is going to increase. And unfortunately, we also know that some of the achievements we made during the previous government are now going to be under threat. In the last government, we had a very clear commitment from the Ministry of Health to give health insurance for the first time to asylum seekers. This was something we were promoting for 10 years in our conversations with the Ministry of Health. And finally, it looked like it was about to happen. And we were sort of going through the bureaucratic stages of figuring out how the budget would work and all those aspects of things. And now, you know, we have this government that has already declared what it thinks about asylum seekers and is not going to be giving them healthcare. So it just means that the need for our services is going to be even bigger. And at the same time, we as an organization are now facing threats. They're not all new, but the passion behind them has increased. So one of the coalition agreements between Ben-Gvir's party and Netanyahu's party specifically says that they'll introduce a law to impose taxation on foreign governmental funding to nonprofits. This means that any organization that gets grants from the European Union, that gets funding from the Swiss government, like we do, is at risk of losing quite a lot of that funding. They're talking about 50% taxation, but in many cases, if this bill passes, it just means the grants will be canceled. For some anti-occupation organizations, it's almost all of their sources of funding. And it's a very scary prospect.
And maybe to also talk about something that gives us a bit of energy, you also mentioned the protests happening today and also in the last weeks. What do they look like, or what is going on in terms of protests against this new government?
I have to say that when they started, I was a little skeptical because I live in Tel Aviv and I went to some of the earlier protests. Every Saturday night, there's a very big protest, which about 100,000 Israelis attend, which in a country with just over 9 million people is quite a lot. At first, I was a little disappointed by the fact that they're still very pro-Israeli in their sentiment. There's a lot of Israeli flags around, and people who choose to come, say, with a Palestinian flag or a sign about the occupation don't always necessarily meet with the best response. Some people have said, you know, that's all well and good, we agree with your message, but now is not the time to talk about that, when some of us feel this is exactly the time to talk about it, because in a way it's the source of everything. But I think as time is going by, they're radicalizing and people are understanding how alarming the situation is and are becoming more passionate and more willing to put themselves at risk, which I think is really admirable. I'm here in Switzerland and looking at images of the protests today in Tel Aviv. And I think, you know, wow, I don't know if I would be brave enough to put myself in front of tear gas and stun grenades. And, you know, I'm really amazed that these most middle class regular people are so worried about the direction things are going in. And we are also seeing more connection between the different problems that all led us to where we are. I don't know if people have heard about what happened in a Palestinian village called town called Hawara a few days ago. But there was a attack where Palestinians killed two Israeli men right next to the village. And then a group of about 400 settlers stormed the village, the town, burned down about 100 cars and a bunch of houses. People had to be evacuated. A Palestinian man was killed. People were injured. So there was a really beautiful solidarity protest with them in Tel Aviv. So I think if things keep going this way, there is hope to stop some of these things from happening. It's already creating some cracks in this insane government. There's already been some signs that people are reconsidering the direction. And we just need to keep pushing, as scary as it is.
Radio Lora, 97.5 MHz.